DW.
Well, usually, and we work with a network of journalists all around the world, so conditions of free press vary from country by country. So yes, we are concerned, and you can see that in dangerous countries, like the danger is not only for investigative journalists. Like, there are countries in which journalists are in danger just by covering daily news. But yes, investigative journalism takes risk, and that's why we work in a cross-border manner.
Have you ever felt in danger?
Well, the thing is, I come from a city that is very dangerous by itself. So I have felt in danger, not necessarily or not only by the profession, but also by my surroundings, because I come from one of the most dangerous cities in the world. So
you're talking about Caracas.
Yes.
The Venezuelan capital.
So yeah, sometimes like crime can be a real issue. Or where you can't take out your phone while you're walking. I do remember when I was...
Yeah, we're walking through Bonn right now.
Yes.
If this were Caracas, would you be afraid? I mean...
Well, I would be very careful.
I'm kidding, it's not night right now, but would you be...
It's not, but I would be very careful. You develop like some sort of... In other countries could be paranoia, but in this case, it's mechanisms of self-defense. Because then, when I was reporting in Caracas, I would have always two phones, one very old and one that is like more like a smartphone that you could use. But the old one is the only one I would take out if I needed to do a call. I would never answer the phone on the street.
Why not?
Because you could be robbed and you could be attacked easily. So you need to be paying attention everywhere you're walking.
So you would never walk home alone?
In the night? I love to walk, so I would walk home. But...
You are a very fast walker, right?
Well, but that's part of the mechanism, because in a city like that, you start walking very fast so that everyone knows and sees that you're confident.
You're way faster than me. I've been like pumping it here.
But that's the style. Like we would be walking fast. You would usually not be smiling a lot so that you don't think that
don't
you're like
ideas.
An easy. Don't get any ideas. You won't be very overdressed because that could raise attention. So you wouldn't be as low profile as possible.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
You were involved in a project that sent shockwaves around the world, the Panama Papers. What was your role in that project?
Yeah, well, I was the research editor at that project, so I was involved with the research we did for different stories, but also training journalists all around. Like,
how did you do that research?
Well, the research is based on, we have some technologies, we have some platforms in place that allow us to explore and more than, in that case, was 11.5 million documents by the time, and is how you find leads and how you find information in those documents, but then how you go out of those documents and verify the information in public documents and in other parts of the world, like how you can verify that the documents are authentic, and then how you connect that with many other sources all around to know that those stories are real, like, and what are and what pieces of the story, because like if you just find a name of a person owning an offshore company, that's legal. So what is the story then? So you need to do the reporting and you need to do the research to identify what was the company used for. Was it legal or illegal? Were people affected by it? And then so on.
Were you ever frustrated by how just gargantuan this project was? 11.5 million. How many of those 11.5 million documents did you go through?
Well, I lost count. This kind of project like wouldn't have been able without the technology, because we had ways in which like we could put lists of names of, let's say, politicians, people of public interest, and then match them against documents and see, oh, are these names theirs? Is this really the Prime Minister of Iceland? Then let's check. Like, is there an ID number? Is there a date of birth? Like, what are the other ways in which like you can identify? But sometimes, yes, that was a story, but sometimes you found cases in which like, oh, is this a person of public interest? Is there an interesting story? And not, and we are only focused on stories of public interest. What happened with the rest? Mm. So
when it all started making sense.
Yeah.
How exciting was that?
No, it's really exciting, but what is most exciting is to see such maturity in journalists to share really in a radical way what they're finding, and not only what they're finding inside the documents, but what they're getting through their sources. So some of the best stories didn't just come out of one journalist. It was just like several journalists who brought different pieces to the plate, and like it was possible to say, aha, this is what's going on. So there are like several like aha moments in which like you see, oh, this person got a source in one country, this another country, and then when you connect like those documents, you see the story.
Do you ever dream of telling like the perfect story? Like what would be your dream project if the Panama Papers wasn't it? Come on, you've got to be. What really gets you going?
It's the next project.
Okay. So what's your next project?
We don't talk about the next projects. No, I always think that there are so many stories that I'm always fascinated. I did before Panama Papers, there was another project which was offshore leaks, which like at that time there were more than 100 journalists. And I did report on like on the Venezuelan stories, and we were like, "Wow, this is amazing!" So I was impressed when we got Panama Papers and like all how technologies were used to actually raise the level of journalism, and in terms of like everyone sharing resources, everyone sharing and knowledge. So you learn so much from other colleagues. So it changed the dynamics. So I am looking...
Changed the game.
I'm looking forward to see the new technologies. I know we have like people from our technology team developing a new tool that is called DataShare, that then it won't only be like, oh, one journalist who got a leak, like in this case, Süddeutsche Zeitung that shared with like the network and was very generous in that sense, but it could be anyone sharing with other members of the network. So I'm looking forward to see what kind of dynamic that creates.
It will enhance the opportunities.
Yeah, because we already have the opportunity of like we have a place where to go to share a specific set of documents and everyone searches in there. But that like is developed by a team. So this new technology would allow anyone to upload their own documents and decide and get what is called entity extraction. So extract names of companies and people and countries. And then you can decide to share it with other people in the network who are in all those countries and then see what kind of stories you can tell.
Okay, sounds pretty exciting. But you're not going to give us even a hint of your next project? Nothing?
No.
Oh, come on. Just a little tiny hint.
I just say, well, wait a few months and then you will see.
Will it have something to do with home? Venezuela?
Well, and it involves many countries. So, as usual. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing them.
Okay, you heard it here. We've been speaking with...
Emilia Diaz-Struck.
And she is working on something good. Thank you for joining us on Worldly.
Thank you. DW.